Well, I think we'll still have a couple of people coming in, but I will kick off so that we have plenty of time for this fantastic presentation from Carly and Christopher. So hello everyone, I'm Catherine Gobby, I'm the Chief Executive of EM Life. We're part of the EML group and we do claims management within workers' compensation and within life insurance, which is why it's my pleasure to come in, we haven't started yet, haven't missed anything, plenty of seats up the front. Come in, welcome, you're welcome. No, it's great, come. It is my pleasure to introduce Carly Vandenacker and Christopher Murphy. Carly has worked in the insurance industry for more than 13 years in a variety of injury and illness management rehab roles in Australia and in the UK. She joined the life and health claims team at Swiss Re in 2011. Carly has extensive experience in OC rehab field, working as a senior rehab case manager across various disciplines, including workers' compensation, CTP, and income protection and disability insurance. She holds a Bachelor of Applied Science, a Certificate 4 in Occupational Health and Safety. She's a certified disability management practitioner and is currently completing her MBA. So she's well qualified to be here presenting to us today. In 2012, Carly was awarded the Turks Legal Aluka Scholarship for her research paper on the benefits of early intervention in claims management. Carly authored Swiss Re's Life Rehabilitation Benchmarking Report, Rehabilitation Watch 2014-16, covering market insights and on the benefits and challenges associated with supporting recovery and return to work best practice. Carly is currently a member of the Aluka Board and represents the reinsurance life insurance sector on the Australian Signatory Steering Group for the Health Benefits of Good Work. Well, thanks for being with us today, Carly. Christopher Murphy, who is here with Carly and to support her today, is the director of Zentivo, a tech startup. And Christopher has been working with Carly through a partnership that arose out of the University of Sydney and Swiss Re collaboration. So I won't muck around and make sure that we get Carly up here with plenty of time to present. We'll also make sure that we have time for questions, so please get those ready. There's a mic in the middle of the room and I'll have one for us at the end of the session. Please also use your apps for feedback. We welcome it. And so I think with that introduction, Carly, welcome to the stage.
Thank you, and thank you for having us and for coming after what was a big lunch with all those pretty desserts. So as Catherine spoke about, today's session is about how we can use technology to enable return to work. And whilst we came at this originally with a life insurance lens, a lot of the learnings that we've taken out of it can be applied cross-sectorally. So whichever personal injury jurisdiction that you work in, we hope that you'll find this interesting. And Christopher will talk a little bit about the process that we went through, which is quite new and different for insurance and particularly for actuaries. It's around lean design and rapid iteration and failing. And being okay with failure, so I'll let him take the floor for that part of it. But it has been a big journey for us and something that we've taken a lot of insights out of and continue to do so. So what I want to cover today is a little bit about some of the challenges that we face in the disability insurance world. So by that I mean life insurance, income protection and TPD. There's an opportunity that we saw then to collaborate around this design strategy. And as a reinsurer, we're always one step removed from the end customer. So our customers are B2B, so we work with the insurance companies. So this project that we've embarked on really gave us the opportunity to hear from the customers, and that was where Christopher and his team came into play. And what's eventuated is that we've come up with a concept that's new and different, and that we're continually refining, called the Return to Work app. We haven't thought of a sexy insurance name for it yet, so it's still this name, but we hope that as we continue along the journey, we'll be able to take all of the messages that we've heard today and over the 2 days around behavioural economics and what customers want to hear and want to respond to. And the last bit is about other tech solutions that we see that could be supporting customers into the future. So not just today, but thinking about artificial intelligence and how that can help the claims journey. So for those of you who don't work particularly in the life sector, if you do, you know this picture very well. So this year, the Financial Services Council brought out the Life Insurance Code of Practice. And I'm sure if you followed the media, the life insurance market has taken a pretty big hit over the last 18 months in terms of bad publicity and not putting the customer at the centre of what we do. So the words that you see there are the words that we hear from the ground, from the media, from our customers around the fact that the process is hard, it's long, people are getting 18-page claim forms, doctors are getting huge, big requests for information, and it's not a straight-through process, and there's lots of confusion, and ultimately, the whole thing takes a long time, and as we've heard much of today around the longer we wait, the harder it is to intervene, and the harder it is to get good outcomes. So we really sort of took this opportunity to think about the life code and what it says to us about the customer centricity aspect and putting the customer at the centre. And in the code, we see the word support mentioned at least 10 times, the word empathy mentioned 3 or 4 times. And for us in insurance, that's really encouraging to see that that's actually about the customer journey and it's about how we should treat customers fairly and make it as easy for them to navigate their way through what's a complex environment. And we feel that the app is really, really well positioned to help with that journey. So, as I mentioned, the longer we wait, the harder it is to get people back to work. And most of you won't be unfamiliar with that graph there on the left-hand side about as time passes, it really is difficult for us to initiate return to work because of those intrinsic or entrenched barriers that start to set into that person's mindset, their attitudes, and in rehab land we like to call it the Jerry Springer disease. So they know the daytime routine of sitting at home and can tell you what's on at 10 a.m. The longer that goes on, the more entrenched that becomes and the new identity that they have as somebody who's on claim, whether it's in workers' comp, life insurance or CTP. So in life insurance, our average waiting period is somewhere between 30 and 60 days. So if you took that alone and you looked at roughly 45 days or 40 days, the chances that we've got of getting someone back to work drops down to 50%. So if that person's gone off work, they've had no contact from their employer, they've had no contact from their insurer, they might have heard from a lawyer, sadly, these days, but we looked at what can we do to try and bridge that gap at the very first opportunity so that we know about the claim and we can start empowering support to that person at the very first opportunity that we can. Then if you look at the charts on the other side of the slide, this data comes direct from Swiss Re's Rehabilitation Watch report, which covers 10 of the major life insurers in Australia and their rehab practices, the data they collect around return to work and the costs we spend on rehabilitation and how that's moving as an industry. So you can see there the time it takes us to intervene in a claim is improving, but there's still a long way to go. So in 2014, it took us over a year from the date the claim was notified to the insurer to start some form of rehab program. In 2016, we've moved that by 190 days. So we've now taken roughly 6 months off that. But if you think about the graph on the left, the chances of us actually helping that person are quite slim by the time we've had it for that long. It looks even worse from date of disability, and that purely speaks to those notification delays. And we've got third-party administrators, super funds, lawyers, all that sort of thing in the mix that really blows out that notification and makes us even further off foot when we get the claim in the door. Encouragingly, though, insurers are finally getting the message about early intervention, and we're now seeing in 2016 100% of the life market offering some form of early intervention, maybe in the wait period and maybe pre-claim and even absence management, which is now being talked about a lot more in terms of how we can bridge that gap and keep the person at work and employed as long as we can. So, with all of this data and all of this landscape in front of us, what we decided to do was partner with Sydney University Business School, and it must have been good because I'm now, as you heard from Catherine, stupidly doing my MBA. Not stupidly, it's really good. the marriage breaker, they call it, which is quite funny. I'm enjoying it. I'm really enjoying it. So, you heard roughly about our problem, about how long it takes us to engage with people because of those notification delays and how complex the insurance landscape is. So we talked to the students, a group of 20 students, I think it was, about our customer problem, a wicked problem, And then we worked with them across a period of 6 weeks, which Christopher will expand on. And in 6 weeks, we had four groups come up with some amazing solutions. And it got to the point where, at the final stage, the students pitched in their groups to a board of investors and also to some insurance experts to really socialise the ideas and see whether or not they were worthwhile adopting. And Swiss Re felt that one in particular was worthwhile adopting, and that's how we came to partner with Zentivo. So what was our problem statement? We said to the student groups, and as a breath of fresh air, none of them worked in insurance and none of them had the tainted lens of the insurance world, so that was great. But we said to them, we want a tool that helps the injured workers or ill workers to engage better with their insurer, and that really speaks to that code of practice around engagement and empowerment. And we want to help to support and encourage them, particularly in that time frame where they don't know what type of insurance that they've got and they're sitting at home and they're disengaged and things are going down that spiral. Ultimately, our aim is to get them back to health and work. And what did our success measures look like? So we said to the students, and we had to give them a 101 in insurance, but we want to try and decrease the time it takes for them to submit a claim. So in bringing down that intervention window, we want to try and target claims duration. So we think the earlier we get involved, the more chance we've got to get them back to work, and hopefully that results in shorter claims durations and savings. We'd also like to reduce the amount we pay in claims costs, and there's lots of studies that show the later that we intervene, the more that we have to pay in rehabilitation and medical costs because that person's so entrenched and have got a lot of problems that we need to try and unwind. And lastly, really, really importantly, we wanted to get a sense from the customers that they feel more engaged, that the process is easier, and that they feel that that relationship with the insurer is far more empowering rather than this authoritative, you will do this and you will do that to get paid. So, with that in mind, I'm going to hand over to Chris to talk about how they handled the problem.
Thanks, Carly. So, as Carly's spoken about, that was the problem statement that we had presented to us, and we really took that and applied a user-led design lens over the top of coming up with a solution. And so I guess for those people that are unfamiliar with that process, so the lean design sort of is comprised of three separate components. The first being empathy, so really putting yourself into the mindset of the user. And I think for those of us that weren't native to the insurance industry at all, so coming at this from a multitude of different backgrounds, whether it be HR, so I'm a graduate of the MBA program, so at the time was a student going through this, and we had, you know, psychologists that were coming along the journey with us. We had merchant bankers, we had investment bankers, so completely different lens of looking at this problem from the way I think that the insurance industry typically would have approached it. We had an observation and experience of what the customers themselves were actually experiencing. So we went out to go out into the field and we had to actually talk to people that were going through the claims process, as well as other members of that ecosystem. So speaking to doctors, speaking to rehabilitation consultants, speaking to claims managers directly, and then also through Swiss Re access to people at the reinsurance level to speak to them about their experience when they were going through what they were going through. And overarching this is a philosophy that you just iterate. So just come up with a simple solution, throw it at the insurance company, or in this case the reinsurer, so give it to Swiss Re and get their thoughts on what they thought, make some changes, and then go back to market and retest that on claimants and see, okay, if we did X, would that help your customer experience? If we did Y, what impact would that have on the customer experience? And the key learning from all of that is that failure is absolutely an option. So going back to the claimants, and then quite often, we spoke to over 300 of them, so it wasn't an insignificant body of work with speaking to these people. And it was a lot of the time, a lot of the changes that we were proposing to make to that process, they weren't comfortable with and didn't feel it would have a positive experience. And that in and of itself was a valuable learning process throughout sort of the development of this solution. So, as I said, this is the sort of the insights process that we went through. So we spoke to over 100 customers or claimants going through the actual claims process, more than 200 people at this sort of as members of the broader, you know, claimant ecosystem. And then how we went about synthesizing those insights is ultimately where we ended up in the development of the solution. And so these are some of the things that were evident to us in speaking to those different layers. So you had claimants themselves were coming to you and saying that they found the claims process lengthy, they found it unnecessarily confusing, they didn't really understand what was going on at all the different stages of the claims process. Medical practitioners particularly, they felt that the process was really cumbersome, they were really put off by the amount of like paperwork that they had to work through whenever a claimant would come and see them. We had claims assessors that were saying the claim load was too high and they found it difficult to manage. They also found it difficult how to prioritise work. And then the rehab consultants themselves, you know, they felt they were too involved in the process and they wanted to take a step back. So this is ultimately what we came up with. And so, as Carly said, there were sort of five different solutions that were thrown out there, and ultimately what we landed on was a return-to-work mobile application that was it would act as a customer interface between the claimant and the insurance party. So really digitising that communication channel and trying to help the claimant sort of demystify this claims process and help them understand what is going on. And it's really about reducing administrative burden. So a lot of it is the claimants. One of the key feature inclusions that tested really well in speaking to claimants was something as simple as they just want to be able to push a button when they want their claims manager to call them instead of having to wait for their claims manager to call or getting lost in this sort of like telephone loop and it going round and round in circles when they're trying to get hold of the actual claims manager. And the key thing for us was the biopsychosocial triaging. So we were fortunate enough in the group when we were going through it to have like a psychologist that was part of the team and really embedding in it some simple biopsychosocial information gathering triggers in the actual sign up to the actual, to when you sign up for the app and downloading the app, which really is a good indicator of what this claimant experience is likely to be like throughout their claim. And the analytical insight capacity that comes from it. So actually it's got a whole heap of features embedded into the app that help the claims assessor and the medical practitioners that are involved in that claimant experience really understand what's going on with that claimant throughout the claims process. Do you want to speak to the wellness aspect?
Sure, yes. So the great thing about this was that we got to hear a lot of what the customer wanted, and for those of you who know much about life insurance, you've probably seen the forms and the processes, and lots of claims transformation models are going on to try and make the process a little bit more streamlined. So the app was really designed to think about, could we look at having e-forms? Could we look at having these apps downloadable from the superannuation website so that people know when they've got cover that they can claim? And that BPS thing that Christopher mentioned, and that's been mentioned, the BPS model, quite a few times around the fact that we are much better placed as insurance claims teams to manage that person when we understand much more than just the diagnosis and the treatment that they have had. We understand the biopsychosocial factors. So Christopher's team had a psychologist, which was brilliant because it lined up with Swiss Re's research that we've done in the UK and just piloting here around the fact that we can quite accurately predict whether somebody's off, return to work risk of off being off work for longer than 6 months depends on four or five key biopsychosocial factors, which are things like their work ethic and what have you. So we really found that in our pilot in the UK, which we have embedded into the app, that if we ask the right questions at the very start, we can then tailor our support from that very first outset, that very first experience they have with the insurer, to make sure it's tailored to what they actually need and not giving them the full spectrum of everything and spending a lot of time and resources where we don't need to. And that goes back to that claims assessor person saying, I've got too many claims and I don't know which to prioritise. This BPS inbuilt feature really would help to prioritise the claims from the insurer's perspective around low, medium and high risk of long-term duration and where should we spend the most time, whilst also having all of the other benefits of helping that customer interact with their insurer. So from the wellness philosophy part, and Swiss Re and many of the organisations here are signatories to the consensus statement around the health benefits of good work, and we've heard it mentioned from Norman Swan around the fact that being unemployed is the fastest route to poverty and being on benefits. So we know that being returning back to work is very, very important. So we've embedded the app with different features around prompting people about the information about good work, or how important work is to their recovery, and that should be part of their recovery plan. It's not just a standalone thing. So we've integrated lots of messaging that really speaks to that person about wellness and their whole wellness picture. So having exercise as part of recovery for mental health, prompting people to go out and take a walk and do those kind of things around that social engagement, social prescribing. So lots of that info has also gone into where we're at with the app. Ultimately, with the aim of giving the message to the customer that we don't just care about their claim and the diagnosis, we care about them holistically, and we want to try and make the experience as palatable as it can be going through claim and thinking about them in that wider BPS landscape. The other thing that we did in life insurance with the app, because we can't pay for treatment, which is always a barrier when we talk to people, they think that it's like workers' comp and we can just fund a surgery or fund some physiotherapy. We're not able to do that in the life space. So what we've done is done a whole lot of research around community resources. So different programs where things come for free under Medicare or for cancer, for example, exercise programs that are run through the Breast Cancer Network. And we've got all of those links embedded so that the customer can access the community resources in their area without having to wait for a call from the insurer and the insurer to do research to work out what is it that we can offer that person. So we really think that this is, it gives the control back to the customer. They can tailor their own program and access the pieces of support that they actually want to use. We also have a behavioural research unit in the UK, and a lot of that comes out to us in Australia. So we've started to embed some of those principles that we heard in the session with EML around how can behavioural insights drive behaviour of customers in this landscape, and we've embedded things like a benefit calculator. So in life insurance, income protection, you get 75% of your income for as long as you're on claim, so there's not really a disincentive to staying off work. But what this little calculator shows you is the longer you stay on 75%, if you match that with 100% of your income that you would have if you were back at work, that earning gap increases over time. So it's a visual representation for that person about what they're actually losing by being off work. And some people respond to that, and some people respond to other types of nudges around don't forget that returning to work is part of your health, and you can be incentivized through health behaviors and linking in with other systems that are out there like AIA's Vitality around that pre-claim engagement piece. So we hope that we'll keep embedding our behavioural economics learnings into the app. And as Christopher mentioned, this is a process of iterate and iterate and iterate. So we have the MVP and we're out there making it as robust and as useful as possible and learning as we go. The next thing I wanted to share with you, and this is a little bit different and somewhere where in Australia we're kind of a little bit behind the eight ball, chatbots. I don't know if anybody has heard of chatbots, but this is very popular in Asia, and we're starting to see a little bit more of it coming into the Australian market in the life space. So lots of tech accelerators happening over in Asia where we get lots of startup companies to come in and pitch ideas and how that might help us manage claims better. And in the Asia accelerator that we just had in Hong Kong, I think, we had a pitch from a company called Wiser. This is their chatbot. They've made it real for diabetes patients in the Asian market, and now we're looking at customising it for mental health for either Australia or hopefully first New Zealand and then Australia. And what this chatbot does is that it's an AI tool which learns through thousands and thousands of conversations, and I wrote down some numbers because the stats are pretty great. So this chatbot so far has had 5 million conversations with the users. It's in 30 countries, and the mental health version has helped to reduce depression severity by 45% in the users. It's five times as effective having a coach that's an AI coach, and we've increased medical adherence by 10 times, so adherence to treatment plans and all that sort of thing. So it's scientifically based. They've got a research team in Cambridge who are working on the CBT principles or cognitive behavioural principles that sit behind the chatbot. And pretty much what Wiser is looking to do is get this off the ground with a population in Australia and New Zealand where people sign up to this chatbot. And then the chatbot prompts you a longer conversation path to help with your mental health management. And as AI works, it learns with the conversations that it has. So if someone's feeling tired and run down, it has passive sensors in their phone. So if you have a Fitbit, for example, and you've not been out exercising, Wiser works that out and sends you a little message to say, I notice you haven't been too active. Is everything okay? Don't forget that going for a walk could help you feel a bit better about X, Y, and Z. So it really has the capacity to learn with the person and be very tailored and customisable to that individual. And it also has a coach that sits over the top of it to say if anybody prompts up symptoms or signs that they might be thinking of something more serious like suicide, it can prompt to speak to that GP or their psychologist straight away so that we've got that prevention strategy enacted at our very first point. So we haven't started this yet. It's in concept phase, but it's definitely live and working in Asia, and we hope to see things like this offered to customers, again, because we don't pay for treatment. This is something that we might be able to offer as an adjunct and an option that people might want to take up It's private, it's confidential. All of the conversations that go on with the chatbot are de-identified, so the insurer doesn't get any of this, and it's all for the purpose of machine learning in terms of making that tool more robust and helping customers feel that there's something out there to break down the stigma of putting their hand up to say they've got a mental health problem and seeking treatment. So last but not least, I just want to talk to you about where we think the future is for case management and tech. And I think one of the biggest opportunities that we've seen in the last 4 or 5 years is around automation. And I think Norman talked about it yesterday around getting out of the way. And whilst that sounded pretty silly for us in terms of a rehab lens of just leaving people alone, we've actually found that doing things to them when they don't need it makes the outcome worse. So automation has really helped us look at those low-risk claims, so fractures and things like that where there might not be any biopsychosocial risk factors, which we can look at through automation, and then we have straight-through processing of those. So the claims team doesn't have to spend time processing things which actually don't need the intervention of a case manager to interact with the person. They require payment and some support, and then they can get on their way without having a full-blown rehab program. So automation is definitely coming, or it's been around for a while. Many of the life insurers are building rules engines and all that sort of thing to make sure these claims are processed straight through and don't require the level of complexity that some of the other claims need. The middle one here is the machine learning. So this is very much the chatbot looking for patterns, learning as it goes. And then the last thing that we're sort of seeing now is that artificial intelligence, the cognitive computing. And many of the life insurers and reinsurers have invested in IBM Watson, the supercomputer, to really help with that journey around learning and improving the claims experience for people. And I know IBM Watson's got 800,000-odd cases of disability insurance claims from Australia and Asia, and it's in the process now of learning a whole lot from that data to see what patterns can we identify, what types of claims can we forecast and reserve for, and with various reliable data around, we know how long that's going to take to return, and we know what types of interventions the people need at what different points. So very, very much the future for us is to work with technology, and we often have the question asked to us about when will the case manager role be totally automated and robots will replace us. But our answer to that is we don't think that'll ever happen. There's always a need for that people element in claims management, and people don't want to speak to a computer. They don't want to be managed by a computer, particularly if they've got a mental health condition. So for us, the future is how we can use technology and things like the Return to Work app to enable us to deliver a better service, to get that person back to health and to work, rather than being replaced by a robot. We like to tell our actuarial and underwriting friends that their jobs might be automated, but that never gets a good response. But we think, yeah, the future is really using technology to our benefit, not being replaced, but thinking about what can we do to improve our service to customers and put them at the centre of what we do. And we hope that's what the app has achieved. And we will hopefully present to you this time next year or the year after with some really positive results about the utilisation and how we're changing that customer journey on claim. I think we've left. Have I left some time? Good.
Are we on? We're on. Okay. Thank you both. Questions? Is a mic in the middle or I can come to you? Yeah. Thank you.
Just a question about the BPS factors in the app. You said that you collected them up front. Do you continually collect them when they sign in? Because BPS can change over time. So do you update?
I do, yeah. So the study that we did in the UK was acting as a direct insurer, and we asked at the outset of claim these 20 questions. And at the time, it was very important the way we asked the question, so we needed to make sure the customer knew that it wasn't about liability or anything like that. It was about supporting them through their claim and how can we best tailor our offering to you. And then that was retested again at 6 months to say, after 6 months of intervention, how have we moved the needle? And lots of the tests, the questions have got validity built into them from the DAS and other measures that the OMPQ and Rebro questionnaire. So there's definitely the retestability of the factors, and we hope to see an improvement in the scores after 6 months.
And I assume then the answers to those questions do the triaging, and so if they change, then they can move, you know, an answer to the question will move, will almost real-time update any analytics that you've got behind the scenes.
Exactly, yep. Good question, thank you.
Thanks, Carly. Let me start with an easy one. What does a VPS mean?
Biopsychosocial.
Okay, thank you.
So it's the adjunct to the medical model.
Great. I was wondering if you could share a little bit more information in terms of the feedback that you've got from the app so far from the users, and any insights that they're giving you so far?
Great. Carly wants to have a break. So feedback from the claimants. So we've gone back to market with the prototype and tested on roughly about 75 of the people just to give them the prototype and ask them to play with it. And by and large, the feedback's been very positive. There was some negative aspects to sort of like UI and UX feature inclusions that we had in there. So the behavioural economic side of it is really what we've tried to focus on very heavily, on how it represents to the users. So the things like the calculator and how that manifests itself. So some claimants sort of found that very off-putting, and it actually reinforced a negative. So when it was an unintended consequence, so we thought by demonstrating to users, if you showed them what that delta looked like over time, it would actually positively reinforce the benefits of going back to work, but it kind of created this inertia, and they actually felt like disempowered by that because there wasn't anything they could do about it. So it's absolutely, so this constant iteration process that we're going through with the claimants. But the administrative side of it is overwhelmingly positive. So they genuinely, so we have a score that we test, so we have a net promoter score that we're using to measure, you know, how it improves sort of that customer experience. And the information transmission side of what the feature inclusions for the app, the claimants respond really positively to. They really like the fact that there's a resource that they can go to, and overwhelmingly it's because it's an app, I think, is a feature that these claimants really like. It's with them everywhere that they go. So a lot of the times that, like, we get a lot of feedback about customers using it when they're on transportation modes. It's like when they're on a bus or they're on a train, like it's an actual resource they can go to and say, you know, I'm feeling XYZ, is that normal in respect to my claim? And they can go and they can read about information about their specific health condition, for example. Any other questions?
I have one. I have a few. Carly, maybe for you, what else did Swiss Re learn from the customer insight? So obviously part of that process was speaking with customers. We've heard from a few different presenters on their opportunity to speak with frontline participants in the scheme, but we haven't heard from Life. So what else did Swiss learn?
Yeah, so that's a fascinating question, because I think in the insurance world, and everybody is probably similar, nothing changes really quickly, but we've now adopted this lean design thinking to a lot of the projects that we undertake at Swiss. So lots of that test, and if it doesn't work, that's fine, at least we know that, and then we've learned from it, and what can we do differently. So that lean user design has really come into our way of thinking. But excitingly, from the customer lens, we had thought that the process was complex, but even just something as simple as, we had one customer suggest that could they just use their tax file number on some sort of website, put their tax file number on, and then all the insurance that they have under super come up. And whilst we thought that sounded like a silly idea, we can see how that would have made things so much easier, because one of the biggest problems for insurance inside superannuation is that people don't know that they've got the cover, and that's why that notification can take so long. So actually talking to customers and asking them what would work for you, for us were ideas that we'd never thought possible. And the tax file number, we have a lot of work to do with convincing the ATO that that's a good idea, but I think even insights like that, we learn and we think, okay, there must be a better way that we can provide this information to customers to help that earlier notification.
Thank you. Questions? I have a follow-up question then. So lean design principles has applicability, I guess, across the whole range of the claims process and insurance process. Where do you see where's the next place we should be taking lean design principles? You both can answer if you'd like.
I think for us, a lot of the processes that we do are subject to some element of being able to be re-engineered to be a lot more efficient. So because we're so internally focused, what we're finding is that to be able to get insight from our customers, so the insurers, about the way that we deal with them and test things, I think that's going to be an opportunity for us. And also for the life space wearables and using Fitbits and all that sort of thing to engage with customers is a real opportunity for us to look at the data that comes from that and how we can design our products in future to be a lot more palatable and marketable to customers and to dispel the myth that the insurer is only there at claim time. In life insurance, there needs to be a relationship when you take out a policy, because otherwise life insurance is the first thing that they get rid of when the belt needs to tighten. So if we can use this lean design around customer insights for products, we find that that might be an opportunity for us to really hit on the products that the customers are actually going to purchase rather than just assuming that we know what will work for them.
Final question. Obviously, life have a real challenge with the waiting period, the notification period, the waiting period. In workers, we're fortunate to not have as long a waiting period, but we do have still delays between the actual incident and or the onset of the illness and then intervention, case management intervention. Do you see the app having applicability outside of life and even where there aren't as great an issue with delays?
Yeah, definitely. I think we can see that customer engagement piece is a challenge for all insurers, regardless of the jurisdiction that we work under. So if we look at it through the lens of improving the customer journey, I think there's an opportunity for any jurisdiction to jump on board and even to bridge that gap. And I know Comcare's collaborative partnership are looking at initiatives such as a national e-certificate for GPs. And we know that our forms in life insurance, there's like 10 major companies, probably 14 or 15 different life insurers in Australia, and each of them have their own medical attendance statement or medical certificate. We've got however many jurisdictions for workers' comp and CTP, each with their own medical certificate, and we wonder why the GPs don't give us the information we want or they take ages to give it to us because it's so hard. But I think opportunities for us to collaborate and have something that all GPs could use, like an e-certificate for all jurisdictions, we could then piggyback off the app with that to make it easier in terms of automating that form to make sure we get the information quickly and we can then put the customer back at the centre of our program.
All right. Well, thank you for taking us through the post-lunch carb slump. You did that beautifully, so thank you for sharing that with us. Please thank Carly and Christopher.